I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
From the outside, I think it's easy to think that we're like a party brand. You know, we like show up at noon, slam margaritas, and leave at 3.
Oh, but you don't?
Yeah.
My bad.
No, we don't actually.
Fair enough. Today's guest is Stephen Leese, our 2024 MSU Denver Distinguished Alumnus of the Year. Stephen is a 2005-ish graduate of the College of Business, earning a degree in marketing. A Colorado native, Stephen now is the CEO of active sunglass brand Gooder and the co-host of the Culture Gooder podcast. As a serial entrepreneur, Stephen's multiple starts and stops culminated with a moment of self-reflection while on a run. Can I create stylish, high-performance sunglasses that don't make me look like a tool bag? The answer was a resounding yes. Gooder was launched in 2015, and now Stephen is well-known as a dynamic leader who has revolutionized the active sunglasses market with his unique approach to both product and company culture. Under Stephen's leadership, Gooder has grown into a global brand with over 140 employees, or flamingos as he calls them, and he has garnered acclaim from top media outlets and rave reviews from fans. Featured in Inc. magazine and Yahoo Finance, Stephen is known for his creative and irreverent insights into branding and leadership. A proud MSU Denver alum, Stephen's journey from tool bag to industry trailblazer exemplifies his commitment to challenging the status quo and fostering a vibrant, inclusive work culture. Stephen, you're our first flamingo on Bird Talk, but as our president, Dr. Davidson, says, MSU Denver is proud to define itself by who we include, not who we exclude. So for today, welcome to Bird Talk, a podcast about roadrunners and flamingos who are just two birds of a feather.
Strong.
So, thank you. We're so excited to have you, Stephen.
I am so honored to be here, truly.
Yeah, this has just been such a fun, I would say a fun like 6 to 12 months of identifying you, seeing I'm like, oh my God, we've got an MSU Denver alum that's doing incredible stuff. And then, you know, figuring out how do we communicate with a corporate CEO? How do we find him? How do we get a hold of you? Surprisingly, you were so gracious to welcome this and be like, yeah, no, I'm a roadrunner through and through and let's talk through this. And then here we are now on the day where we'll actually get to award you with our 2024 Distinguished Alumnus Award. So congratulations.
What's funny is it's actually really hard to kind of get a hold of me. I don't actually answer email.
Sure. No. I've heard your company doesn't even have email, right?
So we have email, but we don't communicate internally
with
email. It's Slack only. I don't answer email because I think it's a distraction. And also now I get so much spam. So I stopped doing years ago. My assistant actually last year brought an opportunity to be on this podcast. And I said, I absolutely want to do it. I can't do it right now. I'm too full, but this is one of the ones. Please earmark and let's circle back. And so from the very beginning, what it was put in front of me, I put it on the board of I'm absolutely doing it.
Ah, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad you're here now in season two because you're getting the best version of Bird Talk so far.
I appreciate
that. That's the truth. So first things first, when you go on your StephenLeese.com or you go to your profile, your animal, your spirit animal is an octopus.
Correct.
Soul bonded with a basset hound and 16% flamingo. I feel like this is the start of a dating app that just after a few margaritas and an inside joke went a little bit too far. Am I off? What's the precipice behind this?
We created Gooder because we just didn't think there was any brands in the run space that was doing anything fun. Like, you know, we're now a full-on active eyewear brand. And so when we started building the culture, the first 2 years was a side hustle. 2015, 2016, I worked two full-time jobs. And 2017, we started hiring a staff and realized, oh man, now we had to build a culture. We had to do things like performance reviews, titles, where do raises come from? And in there, realizing, man, it's our company. Like, let's just have fun with it. Like, let's really lean into the absurdity. And at Gooder, you can create your own title, for example. You have like your external title that the world needs, but everybody internally has just like a really fun title. And in doing my bios, as I started doing public speaking in 2018 and 2019, I realized I can't write a bio like everyone else.
Right.
I'd be like at a conference and reading a bio and just wanting to fall asleep. And so realize like, let's just have fun. There is important information in there, but want to grab people's attention from the beginning. So like that's really at the core of it, just to make people laugh. Because really most bios, do you really give a shit about?
I work in higher education where we don't have resumes. We have CVs because we have to list every publication that, you know, so I'm conscientious of that. But man, no, I just want to know who you are as a person. And for me, it's always the vibe check, especially if it's a speaker on a stage. Like, am I going to vibe with you? Like, do I feel like you're full of shit or do I feel like you've got something that I can take from this? So I appreciate it.
I was recently at a dinner with a professional acquaintance, and they clearly had read all my biographies. Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, I heard that you saved your co-founder's life on the side of a trail. And I'm like, no, I don't
remember that.
I don't think so. She's no. And then reads like through my LinkedIn bio and I'm like, no, that's just a joke.
Right. People are giving you some sort of award for like, oh, not only has he done these things in the business space, but he has saved lives.
That was a joke. I'm like, that one went too far. Well,
God
it's
damn it.
It's a good litmus test, actually.
it is. Yeah, it totally is. Like, do you get it? Do you catch the sarcasm? Do you catch the cleverness, the fun that we're having? I appreciate it. I do want to circle to this. I mean, I started your bio by saying you're a 2005-ish graduate.
Yeah.
This is a great story. It's great for us. You were probably like, oh, man, come on.
I mean, I fucking love it now.
Yeah, didn't love it at the time, I'm sure.
I graduated high school in 2000. I was on the five-year program. So I walked in spring of 2005, the graduation ceremony. I think I had one class left that summer and went on with my life. So in 2015, I get an email from the marketing department because I have a BA in marketing that says, hey, you're one credit short from your degree. Would you like to complete it? And I said, no, I have my degree. I got it in 2005. They said, you're mistaken. And they said, no, it is you who are mistaken.
No, sir.
And some back and forth, you know, I get my CAP report, everything. What we find out is apparently I never turned in some paperwork for an internship that I did, which was 3 credit hours. And the marketing department let me enlist for 1 credit hour independent study. Worked with Professor Gregory Black. It was super nice. He basically was like, hey, it's clear you've been doing this for the past 10 years. Why don't you write a research paper on something in your field? Here we go. And so by this time, that was early 2016. So I do it, submit it. And then 4 months later, I just get a giant envelope in the mail. I'm like, what is this? It's just my degree, 2016. And the best thing was when I was talking to Brandy about coming to accept the award, I say I'm 2005. She goes, oh, we have your 2016. I go, oh, well, that's actually true. She goes, do you want to be called 2005? I go, no, I'm the idiot that did not fill out my paperwork. Like, right. I absolutely should be classed at 2016. And because of my stupidity, in 2005, Metro was a college, and right. Now in 2016 was a university. So
you upgraded.
I upgraded. It paid off. And so, yeah, at the time it was annoying, but once I realized it was my fault, I'm like, well, this is what you get. And so now I absolutely love telling the story. It's pretty funny.
We talk a lot in this podcast about the zigzaggy lives of our Roadrunner alumni, our students, and how MSU Denver is a good landing place for so many people. We would be remiss to say that you're the first person that that's happened to. You know, it happens a lot.
Everywhere.
It does. And it happens. And what I appreciate, I think, about our institution is that commitment to seek you out. That somebody,
yes.
Somebody contact you and said, hey, did you know you're only 3 credits away? Can we figure this out for you?
Well, I was 1 credit away, actually.
Even better.
Yeah, I actually agree. I'm so grateful. When I found out I won this award, I reached out to Michael and Professor Beck from the marketing department and sent him emails. Like, I don't know if you remember me, but this happened in 2015, and now I'm the Distinguished Alumni of the Year. So I just actually really want to thank both of you for reaching out and working with me to make this happen. Because, yeah, I wouldn't be here without that.
Yeah, I'd be the distinguished guy who took some classes here of the year, doesn't sound as great.
It does not sound as great.
I love that it was Michael Zastro from business.
So yeah, Zastro's great. Yeah.
He's been here, I think he's been on campus for 37 years. And wow. I think that's another testament to some of those uniquenesses about our institution is we have these people that have just been committed to our mission, to our students for so long. And I think often, like, had there been somebody new that didn't know who you were and wasn't through that longevity, and now, 8 years later, after you get that degree, being able to email them again and be like, yeah, so remember you helped me? I love that. That's the heartwarming stuff I think is great.
I want to know, is there like a big board here at MSU Denver that is, hey, this person's 1 credit hour from 2005. He's number one. Like, at one point, was I number one on the board?
Probably
of the oldest with the least amount of credits.
Like, and we were real close.
Yeah. At what point was somebody just going to show up to my front door? I was like, hey, a rowdy was just going to show up to my front door. I was like, hey,
yeah.
Let's fucking go.
And with that, just take this test.
Yeah, take
it real quick. We'll grade it on the spot. We just want to give you this degree. While we have about 110,000 alums that have actually earned their degree, we've probably educated somewhere close to 500,000 students at some point.
Wow.
Whether it's a class or two that they needed for some credential, something along those lines, or they started here, or they ended here, whatever the case might be. So we have gone through that list, and especially the Alumni Association has prioritized that. In the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years, they revamped their scholarship. So we now have this Finish Line scholarship where we are actively seeking out people that are within 15 credits of graduating. And we just say, hey, we know life's in the way. Come to school. We'll pay for everything. Just finish your degree because it's good for you. It's good for us. Let's make this community
that's
impactful.
That's really cool.
And it's been great. We graduated our first graduate, I think last spring, was it? That had received that same thing. Like, we just kind of pestered him, probably annoyed him a little bit.
Yeah.
And close to bringing Rowdy to the door just to be like, hey, no, this isn't a spam deal. Like, we really want to pay for your degree. Come finish it. Find the time. We'll work with you, which
that's,
is pretty great.
That's actually really, really cool to hear.
Yeah, it's a cool process. So obviously, I've been internet stalking you for like the last month. But I also was born in 1982. And so I have a very yet to be disproven theory about our generational mix, right? So we occupy this weird generational space. I have an older sister that's clearly Gen X. Mm-hmm. Got a younger brother that is the most marquee millennial you'll run into. I grew up drinking from the hose, playing outside till yep. mom said, get your ass in for dinner. Never allowed in the house on the weekends, like go figure something out, 100%. Play with somebody. But I also had no problem with technology. I am values-based driven when it comes to the work that I do. And so I have some of those components. So I think there's a few of us, like in that 1981, 1982, maybe 83 space, that we're kind of in that weird mix.
Yeah.
Now being at the face of the corporate space and you're dealing with probably leaders in all over the map, whether they are in your similar generation or younger or older, what do you think is unique about what you bring because you kind of straddle that line between traditional and new age thinking?
First off, have you heard me talk about this before?
I haven't.
Because I have actually done a very similar rant before.
That's awesome. We've called it a rant, but a point of view. Yeah.
I agree of the point of view. We are in the sweet spot
of
having between old times and new times. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have cell phones in high school, which was incredible, but we got them early. We didn't have social media in college, but we're young enough to understand it. Yep. Yeah, it was, I've gone through this before. So the question is, how do I apply this in the workplace?
Yeah, and how do you, what benefits are you seeing from it?
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, one, I'm hypersensitive to becoming the person who does not age with technology.
Yeah.
So something like ChatGPT comes.
Yep.
I set a reminder in my Todoist where I use ChatGPT for 10 minutes every day, right? Because if you're not using it, you don't understand it.
Yeah.
And I'm hypersensitive to myself to not become like the old get off my lawn person.
Sure. Although there's times though that I want to be that person.
Well, there's times I feel that.
I know.
Yeah, they're inside thoughts.
So I get it. So I think that the alarms and making sure you're disciplined in that is a great strategy. Yeah.
But I think when you kind of look at Gooder's culture, you actually kind of see elements of it creep up, like the I'm not a slave to email, mm-hmm. right? For our listeners out there, everybody has emails, but you're not allowed to send emails internally. Sometimes you have to send emails because your job requires you to work with outside partners, but nobody emails me inside the brand. We use Slack. We're trying to remove like just inbox, people checking inbox like crazy. That's connected to what we're talking about. We try and balance technology with not having to be connected all the time.
Yeah.
Growing up, my parents were really good at like building containers. There wasn't a lot of rules. I was the youngest of threes. My brother was 5 years older than me. My sister was right in the middle, 2.5. And so 77, 79, I was born in 82. And we never had a babysitter. So yeah. My brother's 11 years old. He's watching us. I'm home from kindergarten at 6. And there was never, we do whatever we want after school, but we were home at 5:30. Hmm. You were not late for dinner.
Yeah.
I didn't have a curfew ever, but every Thursday, we cleaned the house and mowed the lawn. We did not negotiate this. Like, that happened. And so what I learned in there is I love freedom. Like, I need to be free, but I want to be held accountable.
Yeah.
And so when you look at kind of the world of Gooder and my professional career, there are those lessons. For example, we are a Tuesday, Thursday company. So in 2017, this is pre-pandemic, you only have to be in the office Tuesdays and Thursdays. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, completely optional. So, right. So you build containers where you hold people accountable in certain areas and you trust them in others. And so I think that there's bits of that for sure have shown through in how I've worked to design our culture.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, especially higher education. Right. This is a longstanding traditional institution.
Yes.
And COVID was hard
yeah.
for a place that has their bread and butter on students come to a classroom, faculty teach in person, administrators are here to facilitate whatever, to then switch to completely remote. And now we're navigating the space where now we do have ChatGPT. And so a lot of the stuff that some of us have done and have made our bread and butter on working because we are doers and we're tactical are now finding ourselves with, oh God, the fear of technology can take this on. And it is interesting for me as I stand back and see it happen is the response response you get. You either get the fear of, oh God, someone's going to take my job, or you get this other response, which is, great, I don't have to do that part of my job anymore. What can I do now?
Yeah.
Right? And that has been the hardest, I think, negotiation in a staff that, you know, sometimes goes from young people that are 23 years old to people that are, this is like Michael, who's been here for a long time, right? And so how are we embracing that? Like, it's our decision to respond how we need to respond, but as a culture, how do we influence a big machine, whatever MSU Denver has, to say, gosh, let's have a unified approach to things, that it's like, yep, we embrace, but also we are patient in space. And so I love to hear that there's organizations that are doing that. Higher ed, I think we're a little bit further behind, but we're getting there, right?
I wouldn't be surprised if we see colleges go back to like to the Socratic method for finals with technology and ChatGPT. Just, you know, you stand in front of a room, get asked questions, and you answer them. I think that is actually a weirdly unique solve for the problems that we have. I do not subscribe to the, oh, Gen Z is this and millennials are this. We all are influenced by our behaviors, but I see people from every decade, every generation, extremely great at their jobs, diligent. I see all sides of the spectrum from every angle. So I also don't think it's a generational thing. You know, I'm always very mindful of not
boxing people in there. Yeah. No, I've been the old guy in class a couple times. I went to law school later in life. I picked up a degree from here as I was working. And so I've been, you know, that old person that sits in class. And what I loved about MSU Denver is I never felt that way. Like, it was actually very much embraced. Like, I'd have traditional aged college students asking me like, oh, so you've actually worked in this space. How did this work? And I was like, oh, this is great and different, right? So I've seen that as well. Like, it's not a generational thing. It's just, I think what you're influenced by, probably informed a little bit by your fears too. What is in your head telling you, oh gosh, do I need to be afraid or should I be a little bit more risk averse versus like, I'm excited for risk, let's figure this out. And I think it comes to the ideas of vulnerability and, you know, a lot of those things that I think if we can build those into a culture, it helps set a model for how we can respond to that.
Yeah, I think businesses, universities, parents, we need to do a lot better job at setting boundaries and being very just honest and clear. Like, for example, we were super liberal on our work from home policy in 2017, right? In 2017, not a lot of companies were doing what we were doing. In the office, Tuesdays and Thursdays, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, completely optional. Then the pandemic happens, we go full remote. So we were uniquely qualified to do it immediately. But then, you know, we're in LA, which the COVID regulations lasted pretty long, but we brought everybody back as soon as possible, September 2021. To Tuesday, Thursday. And so we were into the pandemic ahead of the curve, and it feels like we came back behind the curve a little bit. But the entire time, the 6 months leading up to it, there was no gray areas. Like, this is happening here, and if you don't want to come in, I respect that. Let us know. We will work to transition you out. You won't have a job here.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with anybody choosing anything. This is a really important example because I, at that time, and even through 2022, and it's still going on now, I talked to a friend who is he's a writer, went to a giant film studio, parking lot for 500 cars, right? 12 cars there. And meeting with the executive about a movie idea, what's going on? Why is that? He's like, oh, you know, because of the pandemic. And he's like, no, you, it's because of you. You're not making this happen. I think that we all have an opportunity to like be leaders and take ownership. And what I've learned at Gooder, I'm not trying to be liked as the CEO of Gooder. I'm trying to be respected. And the best way I can do that is to just be as honest as I can with people, even when it's not the most loved opinion. Where we see the rub is when people are unwilling to just be not liked at times.
Fair. It's the Michael Scott syndrome. You know, do I want people to fear me or like me?
Yeah.
I want them to be so afraid about how much they like me. Right? I love that you're very thoughtful in this space. And I think that is a great testament to probably your starts and stops, things that you learned as you had businesses off the ground that then didn't work. But you are fully bought into building the culture that you think your company needs, that probably this world needs to an extent. Was that natural for you? Or did you have to kind of train yourself to want to be so focused on culture?
Oh, man, it's interesting. I used to keep an Evernote when I worked at corporate America that was, oh, all the things that I would do when I run my own company. Like super liberal, you know, work from home policy and unlimited vacation and so on and so forth. And 2017, we actually had a staff. And 2017, 2018, I had this like, oh, fuck moment, which was, are you going to put your money where your mouth is? Are you actually going to do the stuff that you said you wanted to do? Because it's not always easy and it's not always cheap. And the answer was like, yeah, like, easy is the first step towards average. And if you know me, I'm never going to be average. And we've been growing fast, you know, 7 people to 25 people at a rate that was actually, it was fast, but slow enough that you could build the culture. And like, I love it, right? It's not work to me. Designing our staff meeting to be super engaging, designing our performance review, those things I find really fun. I find them interesting problems. I love people and like human dynamics, user experience, and how to get the most out of people. And so I guess it was natural to me. I just really enjoy solving hard problems. Also, I have like a chip on my shoulder at times of when people just, you don't think I can do this? And I can make this work.
100%. I've got that too, where it's like the best thing you could ever do to motivate me is tell me I can't do something. Yeah. I'll be like, fuck, I can't. Let's go. You know, so I'm with you. In your conversations with Brandy, she mentioned that you guys subscribe to Brené Brown.
Yeah, I love Brené.
Which is great. That's some of the culture work we've been doing here. We started it kind of in university advancement as we were needing to grow at a rate that wasn't happening. And it wasn't necessarily because the effort wasn't there or that our strategy wasn't right. It was because we were just moving in different cogs and different wheels and nothing building upon each other. We deployed that, I think, about 3 years ago, and it has been unbelievably successful at giving us a unified language, giving us a way to have challenging conversations, a way to understand that, yes, you might not understand what I do and I might not understand what you do, but we know that we have to work together. And so how can we solve some of the issues that maybe my work tangentially is causing for you that I don't even know, right?
Are you using the Dare to Lead curriculum?
Dare to Lead. Yeah. So, and then we actually went through the Dare to Lead stuff. We all got certified, which was great. And I think the funnest, that's not a word, the funner, right?
Can the
I
funner? Say funner? Yeah. Yeah. For
no,
sure.
No E. The more fun thing for me, having been here for about 11 years now, is to see as we're now onboarding new staff, because our staff is growing, we're producing greater results. And so that need to have a feasible growth is there. We're getting to kind of give our spin on what that Dare to Lead culture has done for us and what it can do for you as a person, as an employee, as a spouse, as a friend, as a parent, whatever that might be. And we're getting to bring these new people into this culture. And that's the day one expectation.
Yeah.
And that makes such an unbelievable difference.
It really does. It gives you common language. Also, a gooder, what's important to me is there's the work skills and work with each other, but we're giving people life skills.
100%.
And they get to go home and be better husbands, wives, parents, partners, friends. And that makes the entire work environment better. You know, it's a giant ecosystem. And the thing that I wish more companies would understand, it's bigger and it's hard to quantify, but it's really, really important. And it does affect the overall vibe, working together. And the big thing at Gooder is we want to build that trust. Not so we can always live in harmony. That is not the goal. It's so that we can create safe friction. Mm-hmm. If we're all thinking the same, no one's thinking. You need friction. You need dissent. But you just need it in a safe way where people don't feel threatened. At Gooder, it's completely normal to be like, you really fucked that up. Like, yeah, that was a disaster. That
right. Yeah. The accountability.
You
huge.
Are correct.
Yeah.
But the common language is really important in learning anything. And I'm a huge Brené Brown fan.
I love what you say about the friction. We have a program here on campus that's called Call Me Mister. It's really focusing on making sure that we are getting especially young men of color into our schools to teach, because who are our students? Can they have a mentor, yeah, or a role model that looks like them? We know the research has shown us time over time, whether it's healthcare outcomes, whether it's educational outcomes, if you have somebody that looks like you in that space, you're inclined to do much better in those situations. And so our Call Me Mr. program out of our School of Education is incredible. And so we have a young group of young African-American men that are here in the space, and they are very performative in what they do as well, which is great. Because they're getting kids fired up and they're getting everybody interested in what they're talking about. But Dr. Rashad Anderson, who runs that program, when he first was talking to me about it, he's like, Jamie, it's like those washing machines. You know, you buy a new washing machine now and it's just a big hole. He's like, what happened to the old school ones that cleaned a little better? What did they have in the middle? He's like, it was that thing called the agitator. You got to be an agitator. And my mom will tell you, a washing machine with an agitator cleans a whole lot better than a washing machine that doesn't.
That's such a good analogy.
But that's what it makes me think of, where it's like, no, we don't want to cause chaos. We don't want to cause fear or anything because we're moving at too fast of a pace. But we are going to push the envelope. Expectations do continue to grow. And if you're doing it in a culturally sound space, then it's not a boss saying, no, you're just going to do more work.
Yeah.
And it's no, we're going to provide more resources, more support, more people. We're going to grow in a thoughtful and intentional way. But you got to agitate some things, because there's always going to be things that are lurking in places. And so we got to be able to find a sense of comfort in that discomfort. And so whether it's friction, agitation, I just love that mentality of like, no, we got to train you how to do that. Because that's not an inherent skill for a lot of people.
You train people how to do it, how to do it with their teams, and how to do it to themselves.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you are comfortable, you are not growing.
No, couldn't agree with you more. Although I will say in my last performance review, and my boss said, so what's next? I was like, I don't know, I'm just kind of good right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard myself say it, and I was like, shoot.
Well, there's a season for that. I will say that you can't be at a dead sprint all the time. Yeah. And I think I try and always manage. We're in the trimester system at Gooder. We used to do quarterly reviews, and we realized we didn't need to do them every quarter, so we're in the trimesters. Mm-hmm. What I've realized is there's just different seasons where sometimes you really excel and you have a lot going on. Other times you might be learning a completely like new skill and it's just different. How do you just acknowledge that season? Also, if somebody's just always constantly a high performer, then they're just not playing a big enough game. Mm-hmm. If you're not making a mistake,
yeah.
You're not
selling yourself short.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I do it all the time because I'm like, well, yeah, but that's a lot of work. Yeah. I also do it.
Right. There's the internal monologue that you got to get through. There is that opportunity that every once in a while, it's okay to take a breath and say, no, I'm going to get really good. I think part of it too is I'm doing stuff now that I've never done.
Yeah.
So I'm not thinking about what's next. I'm thinking about how can I be better at the things I'm doing.
Yeah. You've been going wide and now mm-hmm. you have an opportunity to go deep.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Over the past 6 months, I've been the CEO and the interim CFO at Gooder. And so we recently hired a new CFO and a lot of stuff had been pulled off my plate over the past 6 months. And I told my team, I'm like, hey, it's not going back. Mm-hmm. Keep it off yeah. because I've been pulled incredibly thin. I want to take a step back and decide where is the best use of my time.
Yeah.
You know, I've been extremely wide. Where now am I going to go deep? Mm-hmm.
It is. I think 40s was that space for me when I was like, okay, life's kind of, it's going. It's on a good trajectory. Work's going. It's a good trajectory. And so now let's just refine ourselves in some space.
Yeah.
My mom would always call me a Renaissance woman because it was like a bunch of different things. And I was like, yeah, that's now as an older person, I'm like, okay, well, yes, thank you. That's flattering. But I'd also like to be known for being actually impactful in a singular space. So I feel you on that.
Well, range is good, though.
It is. It is. So one of the other things about your company that I love is your fuck to fix meetings.
Yeah, FDF.
Brandy couldn't remember what they were called. This was like 6 months ago. She's like, he does these things. They're called like unfuck it meetings. So we started having unfuck it meetings.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she was like, that's not what it's called. I was like, we're still going to call it that. What I love about that mentality of just having a designated time where I'm going to fix something that's broken, you're leaning into people's curiosity yeah. and problem solving.
Also, we're acknowledging that things are fucked and it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a big deal too.
That's a big deal. So right now it's one Tuesday a month. There's no meetings are scheduled. The calendar's wide open for everybody. And it's an opportunity for teams to meet, cross teams to meet. And you know, it's like, oh, well, let's meet on that. The September F2F to solve that. There's always problems to solve. You really realize when you get a bunch of people in a room together how quickly you can solve something, much quicker than sending Slacks back and forth.
Sure, sure.
And also, there's an energy to just everybody kind of galvanizing together to solve mm-hmm. one problem that I love. I think that some of the magic at Gooder is, I would say, I'm like, Gooder's a fun brand. And yeah. one thing that we do is we take having fun very seriously. Mm-hmm. And it's a gift and a curse. There's a curiosity. There's a wanting to always make things better. So we'll put on an incredible event. And then during the event, like a couple of us will be talking, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, but we should fix that. And fix that. And
oh,
we should
yeah.
fix that. It's a gift and a curse. I'm like, or Steven, you just fucking enjoy what's going on right now because right. this is incredible. But carving out time to fix things is so important. You know, even in personal life, I don't call it like F to F, but there's for sure in my weekly review every Monday that I do, I look at things and I'm like, oh, you know what? Sunday, that closet's a disaster. That closet's fucked. I got to fix it. I don't call it that, but yeah.
Now you will.
Yeah.
The seasons are changing and there's a chill in the air. So you know what that means. It's time to wrap yourself up in Roadrunner spirit. For the first time since 2018, you can get your custom MSU Denver ugly holiday sweater. And if history tells us anything, you don't want to delay, as these are a hot item, both literally and figuratively. We sell out quickly. So visit msudenver.edu/alumni today and get your sweaters before the cold sets in. Roadrunner special alert. MSU Denver is rising, and we want you to rise with us. For the first time ever, MSU Denver is in a comprehensive fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100 million in support of our deserving university and students. Grab every Roadrunner you know and join us on February 19th as we celebrate our incredible university and look towards the future. Learn about our fundraising priorities, embrace your Roadrunner school spirit, and find out how you can help all Roadrunners rise. So save the date, February 19, 2025. You won't want to miss it. This episode is brought to you by the Roadrunners Rise campaign. It's time to give a flock. So this is probably your first time back on campus in a bit, right?
Really back on campus. I was actually in town 2 weeks ago for a family reunion, and I stayed downtown Denver. And so I went on a run. And so I did a loop around campus, but, you know, that was like 7 a.m. on a Saturday. And so this is my first time on campus in a building in a real capacity in,
20 years?
20 years, probably. Yeah. 19 years.
I imagine it's changed a lot.
It has.
The building we're in right now didn't.
As you're walking here, I was saying, man, it was a college when I went here. It was MSCD.
Yeah.
Now it's MSU Denver. The best way I could describe it is it grew up.
Yeah.
In a really cool way.
Yeah.
You walk in, it's really cool. It's really pretty. The buildings, you can just feel the maturity of the university now.
That's awesome. I love to hear that, especially for alums, because we get that a lot. We've really amped up our alumni programming and have a great staff that has been doing incredible work over the last, you know, 5-10 years. And so we're seeing a lot of alums that are making it back for the first time since the 80s, since the 90s, the early 2000s, many of whom, keep in mind, live here.
Yeah.
But they just haven't had a reason to come back to campus. It is so fascinating to hear their take on it. And it's very similar to yours. It's this idea that there's just a level of maturity and like officialness that wasn't as easily perceived back in the day. And so I love to hear that. And with our plans for continued growth and our new like enrollment goals that we're moving towards, I think this is going to be a very, very incredible place that is really solidifying the college in Denver that is having the most impact. So
yeah, it has a special place in my heart. I actually really struggled in high school. I didn't get good grades. And so I could not have gotten into a lot of colleges. And the accessibility that Metro provided me is probably the only reason I have a degree. It's not lost on me. And so it's a very like special thing that I hope that the powers to be understand and are proud of.
We still just continue to regurgitate this message of accessibility, affordability, and excellence. And it's the reality of why our students choose us. It's the reality of the impact that we're hopefully helping to foster that they will have in the community. And so no matter how we rebrand, and I know we're going through a new one here coming up shortly, like I guarantee you at the heart of that will still be affordability, accessibility, and excellence, you know?
Well, what's incredible, as I was writing my acceptance speech for my Distinguished Alumni of the Year Award, if I meet somebody on an airplane, they don't know what Gooder is. How I always describe it is, if you imagine the sunglass Venn diagram of a fashion, active, and affordability, we own the middle.
Yep.
You know, we make $25 active eyewear for anyone. So that's how I'll describe it. And at the core, our infinite vision is to create accessibility and connection to as many people as possible to be unabashedly themselves. This wild thing happens in the world where I will say nice sunglasses to complete strangers. I've done it dozens of times all around the world, and they will just regurgitate the brand. Oh my God, it's this incredible brand, Gooder, and they go off. Or I was at a wedding last year getting a drink, and this woman came up to me at the bar. She goes, are you Stephen Leese? Are you the CEO of Gooder? Like, clearly she'd heard that I was there.
Sure.
And then just 5 minutes, oh my God, my husband and I love you so much. We found you in this local outdoor shop, and now we're obsessed with you. It's so cool what you do. She's gushing about it. And because it's $25, we have like 30 pairs. Mm-hmm. It's just really special what you do. And if you unpack that, I always like ask so many questions to any customer who comes up to me. It's an overwhelming experience. But what you unpack is we create accessibility with our price point, and we make people feel connected. And when you create accessibility and you make people feel connected, it is a very powerful thing. I couldn't have labeled it at the time, but Metro had created an incredible amount of accessibility to me that I will be forever grateful for.
Yeah, we're the Gooder of higher ed. But I do. I thought about that too, because I have been wearing Gooder glasses for a long time. I didn't fangirl them with them on, but we actually have a friend who was a part of like your early on influencer program too. So she'd be like, oh, check these ones out. You know, there was a group of us that went to Mexico. This was probably 4 or 5 years ago. And one of our friends just came home with like 12 pairs of Gooders and was like, this is what we're wearing. Cause we didn't want to be the t-shirt people in Mexico, but we wanted to, you know, we were still going to be girls, you know?
Yeah.
As I was thinking through that, I go, no, the part of it that's great is like, even if I just want to go out and buy something that goes with that one bathing suit or that one shirt or that one dress, there's accessibility there.
Yeah.
And you're still feeling like you're a part of that, whether it's the sunglass community that I subscribe to, if ask if I feel like I have some sort of brand connection to that or just the type of look and feel and vibe that I want. I have cycled through the, like, I buy really expensive sunglasses to then I buy the $5 ones in a CVS pharmacy yep. because I know I'm going to break them or they're going to fall off the boat or whatever the case is. And what's wonderful is that you're absolutely right. Gooder has done this perfect middle of the Venn diagram of accessibility, but still community. I was even thinking about this over the week as I was prepping for this, that I feel like MSU Denver is that as well.
Yeah.
Like, we're creating that community. We talk at length about that here on this podcast. One of our greatest assets that we bring at this institution is making you feel like you're a part of something. What's hard is that because we are a commuter school
and yeah,
because we're
it's
in
hard.
Space, not everybody finds that thing, but God, when they find it, they're in. When we can build that community, man, do people feel the value of the experience that they have here. And so we have that full spectrum of like, no, I bleed red and blue. I am as Roadrunner as it comes. And other people that are just like, oh no, I literally just drove there for my 3 o'clock class and then I had to go back to school.
Yeah.
And so then the burden becomes on us when they're alums to say, no, but let's invite you back and get you more connected again. So we found a good mix of doing that.
Yeah. And I would actually say that you're also providing a value for the person who just needs that one class.
100%.
Sometimes it is enough that for $25, we could put a smile on someone's face. They could buy the fun pair of pink glasses that they want and read a name. And like that's it. That doesn't need to be anymore. And I think that it can live on all ends of the spectrum and we can meet people where they need to be.
It's almost like you've read our president's talking points.
Really?
She talks about that's it funny. As a, that we meet you on your zigzaggy path. That's her go-to line. And it's the truth. Like, we're not going to be everything to everyone, but we can be what you need at whatever moment that we do cross paths.
For me, I needed a place that the accessibility of the standards, the tuition, and I had to work full time during college. I needed a place that I could do my schedule either Tuesdays and Thursdays or Mondays and Wednesdays. Not the classical college experience, but there's not a football team that you go to. Alas, it is quite irrelevant. It met me where I was, and I will always be grateful for that.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm so glad to hear that, especially 20 years after you haven't been on campus. You know?
20 years after I graduated or eight. What were you asking?
Yeah, exactly. I know when I was writing your bio, I was like, do I write 2016? Do I write 20? I didn't want to like out you to things if I was like,
I love
people
it.
Didn't know. So I was like, I'll just say 25.
I love it. No, I think it's so funny.
So I just saw that Gooder is taking on a bunch of all different types. I mean, obviously you started as a running brand, moved into kind of the golf space, cycling as well.
Right? Yeah.
And now we've got our college line of glasses and some sponsorships. When can we expect the MSU Denver college line?
Oh man, that is such a great question. For our listeners out there, we started in 2015 as a run brand. And in 2017, we asked ourselves a very important question. Are we a run brand or are we an eyewear company?
Yeah.
And we realized we're really good at eyewear because if we want to stay a run brand, I think we need to start making maybe hats and other products for runners.
Sure.
But we pivoted to being an eyewear brand. So then we started making sunglasses for CrossFit, cycling, golf. And today we are an active eyewear brand. So volleyball, ski, outdoor, hiking, baseball, you name it. And a very important distinction. And also we do licensing deals. So we do some, you know, big schools. I mean, I can just impose my will and make this happen.
Okay.
If MSU Denver wants Gooders to sell in their student shop, I will 100% make the licensing deal go through.
100%.
Yeah.
And I just know we'll have all of our athletes in them. Because I get tired, too, of watching all of our, you know, our cross-country runners, our baseball, softball, our outdoor sports. They've got the uniforms that all look the same. They got the shoes that look the same. And then they're coming in with their own glasses. And for me, I'm like, no, let's cure this.
It's so funny. We're doing a bunch of MLB teams. It'll be 2026. A huge chunk of them, I'm looking at them. And I was like, hey, where the fuck are the Rockies?
Thank you. Yeah. Let's get those purple shades.
And Mike, who's our creative director, I know I already told him they're going to be on there. Just pander to me. You all know where I'm from.
100%. It's hard to be a Rockies fan, though, in the NL West when you're surrounded in LA.
Yes.
You've got Dodgers.
Oh, no, I'm always, Padres, no, I still have my Denver Broncos season tickets.
Nice.
You know, Nuggets. I will always be a Denver sports fan.
I get it.
Yeah,
I get
no
it.
Matter what.
That's tough. So I grew up in Los Angeles, Pasadena area, and so diehard Dodger fan.
Okay.
And so that has been a challenge because I lived in San Diego and then I've lived here. So I've always lived in other NL West places. Thankfully, every time that I lived there, the teams were not very good.
Yeah, that makes it easy.
So it makes it a little bit
easier. It does make it easy.
So I have Rockies jerseys. I have Padres jerseys. Yeah. I have LA jerseys. I don't think I could ever buy a Giants jersey. That is just off limits. But it is fun that, you know, I'll wear my Rocky stuff. We had season tickets the first couple years that we were out here. One of the packages where we just walk over after work. It was great. I love baseball, diehard baseball fan. But, like, Dodgers are in town right now. And so, like, I called my mom yesterday. I was like, hey, Mom, I got a couple extra tickets to the Dodgers game. And she's like, the Dodgers game? I was like, oh, the Rockies game. But they're playing the Dodgers if you want to go. Like, I can code switch so quickly when it comes to that.
I hear you.
There is such a big thing to be so invested in sports, and especially where our campus sits right across from Ball Arena.
Yeah.
It's impossible to not be an Avalanche fan, a Nuggets fan. You got to buy into all that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like a religion in Denver.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, I'm with you. So we've talked about, obviously, Gooder is the brand and the company that you started that came off the ground, but six stops and starts before. So I love this idea of the entrepreneurial spirit. MSU Denver, we talk about it all the time. It's much of how we even operate just as an organization is let's try it and let's figure it out and let's see how we can make something better. Actually, our very first guest is a gentleman named Travis Luther, who is also a serial entrepreneur. One of the things he talks a lot about is the mentoring that he received here. Being able to come back to some of our professors and some of the people in our entrepreneurial studies area to say, gosh, here's how I failed. And they just looked at him and said, no, you didn't fail. You just learned how you're going to do it different that next time. So we love that spirit here. And so as somebody that's been kind of in that same space, what advice would you give to young entrepreneurs?
I started my first company. I was actually still, it was 2005. I was finishing up my degree, my 2005 degree at Metro. It was a industrial water treatment company. I don't want to go into it because it's an important story, but I remember taking a direct marketing class here, learning the importance of direct marketing at its core. Maybe the easiest way to determine profitability from your marketing spend. And if you're a young entrepreneur, that's a really important thing to understand. So I actually have a tangible memory of me talking to the professor, and I wish I could remember his name, but it was like very impactful. So young entrepreneurs, I think you got to just start and fail first. Like the idea that you are going to hit it out of the park, that would be great. I hope that for everybody. But the first one's the hardest. And once you fold your first company, you free yourself to understanding it's not that big of a deal. It's like your first breakup. You know what? You know, your first breakup sucks and you do it enough times, it gets okay. My advice, start as a side hustle if possible. Man, if you can start a company that—
you're not going to pay yourself for a long time.
You're not going to pay yourself for a long time. And if you have to pay yourself, you're going to make some bad decisions. You're going to compromise what you want the brand to be, the vision. Maybe you take on clients you don't want. And also, being an entrepreneur, all it is endless problem solving for years and years and years. And if you don't want to do that on the side of nights and weekends— man, you're not going to want to do that.
No, you got to love the work.
You got to love the work.
Because you're not going to pay yourself for it for a long time.
Yeah. You start, fail often, do this side hustle. I was talking to somebody at Gooder recently who's 22, and he was asking my advice. He wants to eventually start like a game development company. And my advice was like, you should find somebody, a game developer, and just work for them for free on the side. Sometimes I think that, I mean, I've done, like in my 20s, I did tons of free work for people and worlds that I wanted to do, that you're building goodwill, you're learning on the job. It's really hard to say, hey, I don't have any experience, could you pay me to do this work? But it's way different. You're like, hey, I don't have any experience, I want to learn this, I'll do whatever you want for free.
Yeah.
And if you make good on that promise, I can point to several examples where that happened and that led to me creating opportunities that led to Gooder. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand. Start early, fail often, don't take it personally. Do it as a side hustle and don't think it has to be the end goal at the beginning. Just if you want to learn a skill or learn an industry, go in and just start meeting people and doing work for free.
Yeah. It's a tough balance, right? Because I think there's a handful of organizations that take advantage of like the free internship model, right?
Yeah.
It's free labor for them. We want to say that we're bringing a skill set in initially in that space. But I think there's a key difference and kind of that indicator of like, no, I'm doing this for my personal growth to understand these things. And so that we have to flip that switch on. That's like, no, I'm willing to go put my time and effort in this. I mean, we have to think about it the same way that we think about anything you want to invest in. Like if I want to learn a language, I need to study that language. And so whether that's classes or that's books or that's tapes, I was about to say books on tape. You can tell that I am in fact from the 80s.
Yep.
If you want to stream that, you know, whatever the case might be. And so there's always that fine line, but I do think we'll never fully get away from this idea that, no, you have to have the initiative and you have to take that first step and be willing to know that it's going to come at a cost at the beginning, but have some faith and trust that you're going to learn what you need to do if you're diligent and intentional in that space to allow you to formulate that skill set or that knowledge base into what eventually will be something that will pay you and will provide some sort of living for you.
Yes. And I don't know about you and your everyday. I throw away more work than I keep. I trash so much work, whether it's project plans or ideas for a talk or some initiative. The amount of talks that I have written that will never see the light of day is insane. I mean, if you want to be a professional and you want to do really high quality work, insert anybody in their field, professional athlete, you know, that the practice essentially is them throwing away work.
Sure.
Right? That is what that is. We're all seeing in the stats that we're tracking. A musician, the album is how we're grading songs, but the amount of rehearsals that go through, the performances, I don't think people quite comprehend. If you want to be a master at any level, you need to get really comfortable with doing a lot of work and throwing it away when it's not good.
Yeah, I've never thought of it that way. But yeah, I think if you went in my trash can even this morning on a Saturday morning, you'd see five or six different drafts of a proposal that we're putting together. Because it's like, nope, I just missed the mark with that. Like, I'm trying to connect the dots between why this building is going to lead to retention, which means that we're going to have more social mobility. And like, it's there. And I sit there. And I, like, sometimes most of my scribbles are, I'm better like just drawing something out. And I'm very visual. And
me too.
Yeah, like even if it's Venn diagrams or it's hierarchies or how do these things connect? That helps me organize my thoughts in that space. And it is. It's like, what is the compelling thing that I need to tell you? What problem does society have? How is MSU Denver uniquely positioned to fix that? And how can your money, by giving through us, help us solve the societal problem?
Yeah.
Right? And so like, you have to go through so many different ways because the variables of what you care about and where your interests are and maybe where your heart is, or is it going to be transactional for you? Do you just need a tax write-off?
Yeah.
And that's valid too. And so we have to play kind of all those variables, yeah, right, at the top and then figure out, but okay, how is a gift through MSU Denver actually going to accomplish this larger problem? Because we can't just simply say, give MSU Denver money because we want more money to do more things for us.
Yeah.
That's not a compelling argument. We need to show that we are solving a larger problem because we have this influx of 16, 17,000 students every year that are going to be impacted by this, that then can go on and be kind of more of this like garden that blooms in, especially in the Denver and Colorado communities, let alone nationwide. It is a cycle of the amount of times. And I do have this conversation with some of my staff members who they'll submit something and it's like, nope, that's not what we're going to say this. And I can see them just kind of sink in their chair like, well, I didn't do it right. It's like, no, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You only know what you know. And that's okay. Let's get back together. Let's figure this out. But it's very rarely that I can compose something and be like, oh, yep, this is the one that's going to get the $10 million.
Well, and what I would say to anybody who's kind of defeated by it is, are you more interested in getting it right or being right?
100%.
Because I want to get it right. I actually don't really care about being right.
Right.
And if you want to get it right, then you got to do the work to get it right.
Yep. So I was a softball player in college, grew up playing a bunch of sports, but big baseball lover, softball. I love that the thing that I was most drawn to was an absolute failure sport.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it is
made... Great is 30%.
That's totally it. I'm always like, listen, all I got to do, I can fail 7 out of 10 times and still be an All-American.
For sure.
Right? And I do think that for years while joking about that, I'm like, no, I think that actually informed so much of value and still feel like my utility was there. And I think it comes down to that idea of, do you just want to be right or do you want to do it right? I think it all ties together. This is
100%.
This was a great therapy session for
I got
to realize who
I'll put a jar here.
Exactly.
Put money in it.
Gotcha.
This idea of how often, if you're working on an assignment, paper, project, are you going through it, talking it through, and thinking about How often are you going through and not just writing a paper and making sure the grammar is correct, but actually asking yourself, what do I want the professor to walk away with from right. this? What idea am I trying to sell? And then actually stepping it through, or if you have to present, presenting it and saying, oh, that made sense in my head. It didn't make sense here. And there is a walking journey. Like you got to walk through so much of life, projects, whatever it is, and kind of just take that next step. I love the linear process of like mm-hmm. walking through things to the end. But you got to touch a lot of trees. You got to walk down a lot of paths yeah. to actually get that work to a really high, high level.
It is not that sprint anymore. It is no longer that race. It used to be, oh, I've got a 7-page paper due today at 3:00. Better push that out. You know, now it's more of the conversation. What am I really trying to say? How am I trying to articulate that? And even if I see it in my leadership too, it's not just, oh, get this task done. It's, sure, I need to make myself available to be able to say, here's where we need to go. Let's spend some time and actually thoughtfully reverse engineer what we want our outcome to be and then figure out the best route there. Because what lives in my brain of saying like, oh, we need to do this, so this is my solution for that, might not actually be the most impactful one or the one that's going to have the greatest impact or affect the most people in that space. I think those are inherent skills we have, but we forget about them. We do them a ton better when we're kids. Then we get in this weird section of life where it's like, we got to go, 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 instead of realizing, you know, let's create quality.
Well, I think context matters. We have a leadership coach. His name's Matt. And somebody will ask often, like, oh, what's your leadership style? And if I ask, what's your leadership style, how would you answer?
I would say, well, that's a stupid question. usually. If I had to answer in a traditional one, I'm usually like, I'm a servant leader. But no, I would actually contest that should not be a question that should be asked.
How I would answer is, depends.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on the situation. Do I need to convince 150 people of an idea and buy them in? Mm-hmm. All right, so then I will be a visionary. Mm-hmm. Are we in a panic? Do we need to make decisions immediately mm-hmm. and move? What is going on? Do I need to lead by example? The context of everything. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a dead sprint. Yep. Sometimes it's quality. Yep. And I think that we all want everything to be a little more easy, clean, direct, mm-hmm. put in boxes. I mean, I do for sure. Then it really is. Context is absolutely everything.
It is. And that's my whole argument for why would you ask me that? It's more, what do you need from a leader? Yeah. It's usually my response is, well, it just depends what my staff is. And I can tell you, even in the time here, I've cycled through totally different staff members that respond to different things. And it's easier for me to change than to ask these people to change in that space. And also, like, I feel like that's my prerogative to some extent. Like, if I want to create a culture that you feel bought into and that you're going to give the best. Ruby and I talked about it this morning. If you like what you're doing, you're going to do it more diligently. You're going to do it better. You're going to be more thoughtful. So what can I do in that space? And truly as a leader, I see 50% of my job as making sure that you're happy. Not that you're happy, but that you understand it's been clearly articulated to you what the expectations are, that you have the support you need, and that you feel safe in a space to be able to say either, I fucked up, I don't know how to do this, I need help, or I got this, right?
Well, now you can say, when somebody asks what's your leadership style, mm-hmm. you can say, oh, depends.
It depends.
Yeah, and you can flip it around and like, you know, help educate, because it really does. It really does.
It takes into account, I think, the deeper set of leadership that then you have to have and the lack of ego. It can't just be like, my name's Steven, I'm the boss of Gooder, and this is exactly how this company works, right? It's like, no. I can be that person when I need to be this person. I can motivate you. I can inspire you. I can be visionary. But also, when we need to get down to business, here's what is going to be explicitly told to you. Here's how it is. If we're in a situation where I can tell that I need to serve you, I need to set the course by example, it is. It's a perfect answer.
And sometimes leaders need to, as we flip this into like talking about leadership, recently I sent out a Loom. Do you know what Looms are? Mm-mm. Looms are, you basically just like hit record, you record yourself talking mm-hmm. and just send it out. So instead of like a long Slack, I just will send it. I can send a Loom of me explaining something. Awesome. I love it because I'm a better orator than I am a typer, and you can just read my emotion. Mm-hmm. I can smile.
I mean, you saved a friend according to LinkedIn.
So, yeah.
So yes, versus the story that you could tell, right?
100%. Yeah. So in there, I'm like, hey, I have so much going on. We have like a stand up, all the leaders, like a 15 minute every week. I said, unless it's like mission critical and you actually need to tell me, I was like, I'm going to trust all you all. I don't want to know anything because I don't have the mental capacity mm-hmm. over the next couple of weeks to handle it. So as a leader, that is me empowering my team. That leadership style right there is me saying, I need your help right now. And I think more leaders should actually just understand what do they need in the moment from their team? Mm-hmm. And are they challenging their team to do it?
Yeah. Ah, I love that. All right. Then you know what that means. It's time for rapid fire.
Oh, questions. I love rapid fire.
All right, here we go. What is your favorite MSU Denver memory?
I remember presenting at an advertising class. So the gen ed, you know, first 2 years, you know, you're getting your credits, English, math, whatever, calculus, did not enjoy. Once I got into the marketing school, I fucking loved it. Yep. And I remember just being in front of a classroom and doing advertising analysis on Vans, actually, and just thinking like, oh, this is what I was meant to do. I'm not meant to take tests. This is what I was meant to do. And I have it like burned into my brain. I can like see the classroom. I could see out the back of the window and the trees burned into my brain.
Ah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What a defining moment. I'm glad that it happened here.
Yeah.
That's rad. What does it mean to you to be a Roadrunner?
I take pride in coming from a school that is not elitist. I am often in settings where people will ask like, oh, Stephen, where did you go to school? And they're expecting me to say, oh, like Yale or like Wharton School of Business. And I go, oh, I went to MSU Denver. I'm a Roadrunner. Meet me. And they do not know how to react. I am incredibly proud of like the accessibility this school has provided me.
Yeah. Ah, I love it. All right. Final one. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
Well, if you want to create change, and I, you know, I see change makers everywhere. If you want to create real change, you need to get comfortable with challenging the status quo. When you challenge the status quo and you really, truly do it, people tend to notice.
I love it. It is. You're right on brand with our Changemakers campaign. That's the plan.
I mean, it.
My goodness. I know you've been gone for 20 years, but you fit right into this conversation. Well, this was awesome, Stephen. I'm just so impressed by everything that you've accomplished. We're so excited to be awarding you today with our Alumnus of the Year award. And mostly, I'm just grateful for this opportunity to share a conversation where we get to talk about leadership, community, challenging the status quo, agitating people. I love it.
It is my honor to be here.
This is awesome. Well, enjoy your rest of your time in Denver. And hopefully next time you're on campus, you'll be running through with some of those new Roadrunner sunglasses.
For sure.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Ruby Matheny, Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, Roadies.